used to think I knew everything about life. What did I know? I used to think I'd seen everything I could see. What did I see? All right, that's Kim Hill. She's singing Round and Round. It was in her head then, but it's in her heart now. And tonight, we have with us, Kidge.
Hey, it's
the
one, me.
The Magnificent. And Robert the Prestige.
Hey, how's it going? I have something playing in my head.
What is playing in your head?
It is an ad. Go away. Thank you. Hey, it's great to be back.
Wow. Is that a Skype ad?
No, it was that website stuff you didn't learn in history class or whatever. Oh. And then they just started playing something.
Okay. We were talking about podcasts we listened to before the show. And
yeah.
Robert has a podcast I listen to called It's Just Us Cast.com.
Hey, I listen to it too.
Okay.
Wow.
Don't be exclusive like that.
Wow. Okay. Sure.
There's plenty of me to go around, okay?
I'll arm wrestle you first, Robert.
Oh.
You win.
Yeah, that's...
Wow, that's harsh. Okay. All right. Well, last...
Hey.
Well, this is a show about apologetics, and what we mean by apologetics is to have an answer. The last couple of weeks, we've talked about foundations. We started off with laying our foundation, which was Jesus Christ. And last week we talked about the cornerstones, which we don't know much about building, but evidently they're important. And they hold the weight of the building to the foundation. And those were loving God and loving each other. Or loving God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, with all your strength, and loving your neighbor as yourself. And Jesus said that the whole Bible, that all the laws, all the principles, all the commandments, and even the prophets rested on those two commands, that they were the most important thing. So, there you have it. Tonight, we're going to continue to build this building called we call the Christian Moral Ethic with going through the commandments and how they relate to these two cornerstones. We're going to take five, and we're going to look at one cornerstone and the five that are associated with it. Are you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Okay.
Come on, man. Commit to it. Yes.
I'm good.
All right, great. Well, let's start off with have no other gods before me. So this is a commandment that is the basis for almost all captivating lies. In other words, if you this one and its companion, which is make no idols, these are two separate commandments, but they work together. Idols, we can have idols without them actually being gods. We can set up idols in our life like rock stars or bands we're really into, anything that gets in the way of us worshiping God. But having no other gods, that means worshiping, right?
That makes sense.
Right.
Yeah.
So if you
I've always been confused by the difference between the two.
If you set up idols and if you worship other gods, then what that means is that encompasses what we'll find out later is out of this commandment builds all of theology and all of the captivating lies of different religions. So you will, in other words, you'll change an aspect of God and that will become your religion. For instance, in the Jehovah Witness religion, they changed the aspect of God that he is not triune, that Jesus Christ was not God, that he was a lesser being than God, that he was a created being. And in doing so, they are worshiping a different God than the creator. Because we know from the Bible that Jesus has always been. He's the same yesterday, today, and tomorrow. John says that the Word was with God, and the Word was God from the beginning. So Jesus claimed to be deity several times. He let people worship him. And even God himself in Hebrews called Jesus God as when he said, you will sit on the throne forever as God. So we know from these different passages in the Bible that God is triune, and that means three parts. And we'll look at the Trinity situation later, so let's not get bogged down in that. But when we talk about have no other gods, this is important, because if you change one aspect of God, even if you're not worshiping, let's say you say, "Oh, I'm going to worship Baal." You know, in this day and time, that doesn't happen very often. What happens most likely is that somebody will claim to be worshiping the same God as us. "Well, I worship God, sure. Yeah, but I just don't like this one little piece of him."
Yeah.
I'm just going to cut that part out. Or, for instance, the Muslims, they believe that they worship the same God as we do. They believe they worship the God of Abraham and Isaac. And but if you get into their theology, they change the character of God. They make him unapproachable, and he's not bound by his character. He can do anything. He can go against his own character, those kinds of things. So there's different aspects to these different religions that change who God is, and by doing that, they're violating this principle. So, and then we move down to the idols. Now, with idols, you can set up idols in your life, like money, anything that you're dedicating your energies to, because the commandment that Jesus laid the cornerstone for these commandments is love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, and with all your strength. So there's no room in that for you to set up an idol in your life. Oh, I'm going to give this thing 10% of my energy.
Yeah.
Okay. And then I'm going to, the rest of the 90% God can have, but 10% of it's going to go to this thing. Whatever it is, water skiing. Robert loves to water ski, right, Robert?
If we had some water.
There you go.
Did earlier this week.
Yeah, more in one day than since 1930.
Wow, that's a lot of water.
A lot of flooding, too.
But Jesus says if you're going to water ski when you have a flood like that, he says, he says in Peter, I'm sorry, 2 Timothy 3:16. He says, "Do everything as though unto the Lord." And in Psalms again, he makes this point. He says, "Whatever you do, do it unto the Lord." And so everything that you're going to do, you're doing it for the Lord. Whether you're working, whether you're taking care of your family, whether you're being a father or a brother or a friend, whatever you're doing it 100%. For God. That's the way that this commandment is supposed to work. You're not supposed to have any other idols in your life. That doesn't mean you don't do anything but go to church. It doesn't mean you have to sit in church 24 hours a day. Mm-hmm. It just means that your entire life is a ministry, and that your entire life should be dedicated to, you know, Solomon. I'm sorry, I didn't finish that thought, but I got sidetracked by this one. I read Ecclesiastes again this week. It's an amazing book. And Solomon had the endless resources. This was David's son, and he inherited all this richness. And so he had this idea, I'm going to find out what's life about. I want to know the meaning of life. And so he went off, and he was able to just go off and marry, 600 wives or something? He had a different wife, a different woman for every day of the year, you know? And he said that was...
How many days are in the year, Brad?
600 or so? Anyway.
I love it when Brad does math.
Yeah.
I think he had 900 wives.
900 wives. I didn't know there were that many days in a year. Okay.
Well, not all wives. Well,
wives and concubines. Basically, he conquered a bunch of places, and there were treaties and things.
But that ended up causing him all sorts of problems and trouble. He did the same thing with possessions. I mean, he was incredibly wealthy, and he built he did it with monuments. He built the temple. Solomon was the one that built the temple. And so he had these monuments that he could be proud of. He had possessions that he could be proud of. He had as many wives. He was very popular, obviously.
Yeah.
And so he had all of these things, and he said that are meaningless. They ultimately, because he was able to take everything to its extent until he didn't want it anymore. It wasn't like you can get one candy bar and you say, "Oh, that was really good." No, no, no. Solomon could have all the candy bars he wanted every day until he was sick of them. And so he said, "You know what? These candy bars are not the answer to life." And he did that with so many things. And even with knowledge, he said, "Knowledge is good. Knowledge is useful. But ultimately, at the end of it all, it's meaningless as well." And he boiled it all down to the next to the last verse of Ecclesiastes is just fantastic, where he says, you know what? Let's just cut to the end. The chief purpose of man is to fear God and keep his commandments. He just boldly says, just do that and then don't worry about all this other stuff. So that's what, that's what we're talking about. And that harks back to this commandment, make no idols. Don't have any idols because they're meaningless.
Yeah, I'm still not real clear on the difference, you know, between put no God before him and make idols either. So I'm going to be learning this too.
Okay. Well, did what I say make sense between the two?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I've never really thought about it that way, so I'm just going to have to process it.
Okay, that's fine. You process.
I'll just be beep, 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 beep. Working.
Working, working. All right, moving on to the third commandment that is related to loving God is honoring God's name. Do not take the Lord's name in vain is the commandment. And a lot of people associate this with cussing or with using God in a cussing way or in a vulgar way. In other words, saying, oh my God, or OMG, or saying, you know, using it in a damning way. And using the God, and using the term for God. But that's not God's name. God's name is not God. God's name is Jehovah. And so I think the principle behind this commandment, I mean, yes, you can violate this commandment by taking lightly and calling on God lightly by saying OMG or asking him to damn something you don't really mean for him. You know, you're not really meaning those things. You're just expressing a cuss. Or has it been when I say that of a vulgarity, and using God in the context. So you can violate this command there, but I think this command goes way further than that. And you know, I heard of this guy this week, Robert, that
me,
it took place. I think it was in Nevada, and this guy pulled up to the stop sign, and it was red light, and it was yellow, and the guy in front of him, and he was trying. I guess he was in a hurry or whatever. But the guy in front of him stopped at the yellow light, which you're never supposed to do in Nevada. Okay, you don't stop at yellow lights. You go right on through them, right?
Well, if you're already moving, yes.
Yes, exactly. Well, this guy stopped at the yellow light. The guy behind him lost it. He was cussing, banging his steering wheel, hitting his horn, waving the favorite finger at him, all these kinds of things. And all of a sudden, he heard a tap on the window. And he looked over, and it was a police officer. And the police officer asked him to get out of the car. And he threw the handcuffs on him, threw him over the hood of the car, threw the handcuffs on him, threw him in the back of the car before he could even, you know, think. And he ran the license. He gave him, got his ID, and he ran the license plate number. And he says, "I am so sorry, sir. I really apologize. But I saw the chrome fish on the back of your car and the bumper sticker that says, honk if you love Sunday school. And I just assumed you'd stolen this car."
Now, why was it in Nevada? That wasn't me.
Because you spoke up and I didn't.
Oh. Well, he wasn't going to say Texas. You know that.
That's true. Why would he?
Exactly. See, kids is in Texas, so he's under the umbrella of protection.
That's right.
Oh, wow. Nevada. Okay.
Nevada. You have to say it three times and it'll come true.
Oh, okay.
It's well, like I thought maybe if I said it three times, maybe Brad, you know, would start saying it right. It's just me.
Oh.
Is it Colorado or Colorado?
I don't live there.
Okay. So
it's Colorado. There's an O at the end.
Oh, okay.
Got it. Illinois.
Oh, boy. Here we go. Yeah. So honoring God, honoring God's name can be violated by more than just saying, oh, my God, in a, you know. So you can say that you're speaking for God, for instance. If you go on television and say, I had a vision from the Lord, and he told me that everybody's supposed to send me the money. And if you didn't really have a vision from the Lord that told you to do that, then you're taking the Lord's name in vain, right?
Oh, I'm glad you said that. Because there's a big hurricane off the coast of Florida, right?
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Right now, I think it was just upgraded. It's a pretty bad one.
Yes.
And if there's like a lot of destruction. Mm-hmm. Oh, is it Louisiana? Okay. Yeah. I just know that I'm going to hear someone say, oh, this is judgment from God. Because, you know, hurricanes only happen.
Oh, we're losing Robert.
Yeah.
Oh, no. he'll call back in. Sure. But I get what he's saying, and that's true. It's like after after the last big one that hit New Orleans, they said this was judgment from God. Well, and it might have been judgment from God, but unless you heard from God, then saying that is taking his name in vain.
Mm-hmm. Hello?
There he is. Hello.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I heard you guys the whole time. And yes, that was my point. So it's just crazy.
Okay.
Plus, it'll hit New Orleans 7 years, I think, to the day.
Yep.
After Katrina did. It, wow. That's tomorrow. So
that's even more judgment.
Yeah.
Proof right there.
Exactly. Or don't like no riverboat gambling.
Right. Or I live in a town that shouldn't exist anymore.
I think the most flagrant use of this to me these days is the Westboro Baptist Church, who go around with these signs that says God hates you, and just because of your sin, because you know God hates you, and they're very vulgar signs. I'm not going to repeat them, but they go around with these signs and with this attitude, and that is definitely taking the Lord's name in vain, because we know that, because it's the opposite of what the Bible teaches. Okay, so moving on. I promised to pick on kids this time.
Okay.
The next commandment that relates to the love of the Lord is keeping the Sabbath holy. And the Sabbath, if you don't know, the Sabbath referred to, originally it was the seventh day after the Lord created the earth, everything. He created everything in 6 days, and then the seventh day he rested. And that was his Sabbath, and that's what the day means. It means day of rest. And so this principle of and that was considered the first day of the week, the Sabbath. And so this principle is giving the Lord the first, giving the Lord the best. It's where we get tithing from, the principle of tithing, where we get the idea that we should bring the Lord our best, that maybe we should dress a little nicer on Sunday than we do other days of the week. You know, these are where these principles come from. I dress very casual on Sundays, so I'm not don't think I'm one of those. But
there's that mentality that
yes, and this is where that principle comes from. And we give the Lord our best. We give the Lord our first, and so that's what you're supposed to take your tithe out first and give that, and before you so you go forward. So these kinds of things. Now we worship on Sunday, not Saturday.
Yes. Now, I don't know about you, but I go to church on Saturday.
You do go to church on Saturday. Okay. Uh-huh. But your church has services on Sunday, doesn't it?
Yes.
Yes. There is a church out there that says if you don't have church on Saturday, that you are not a Christian because of this commandment. That's not what this commandment teaches. In fact, Paul makes it very clear. It doesn't matter what Sabbath you keep. It doesn't matter what holy days you observe, because he was trying to tell the Jew that he was trying to tell these Christians, you don't have to be Jews. You don't have to go get circumcised. You don't have to go and become a Jew before you can become a Christian. He says, all you have to do is follow Christ and believe that he was resurrected from the dead. And he made it very clear. So it doesn't,
well, sure, if you're going to read the whole Bible.
Well, yeah, right. If you're going to read the whole Bible.
Yeah, right.
Sorry.
But the reason why we worship the or go to church and try to and worship the Lord on Sundays, because that's the day the Lord was resurrected. It was considered the Lord's day. And in the beginning, all these people were Jews. Most of the church in the very beginning were Jewish. And so they went to synagogue on Saturday, and they went there and they tried to tell everybody there about Jesus. And then on Sunday, they would come and worship the Lord's resurrection, celebrate the Lord's resurrection. And that's kind of how the tradition started. From at least from my research, there's a couple of other theories too, but the principle here though, in keeping the Sabbath, do we really keep the Sabbath? I mean, for instance, on a typical Sunday for me, I might get up, I'll have to look over, what I'm going to say in church that day. And then I gotta drive to church, probably get stop and get gas. May stop and get a cup of coffee. And then I go into church and then I worship and, I'll speak, whatever, or just listen, whatever I'm going to do, and listen to the sermon, and then speak to a bunch of people. Then we go out to eat, and we have people serve us, and then we come home, watch some football or some baseball, and then,
Who's watching baseball? Never mind, sorry.
Me?
So, Americans.
Americans.
Okay.
And then we, and it is spoken, yeah, you don't have a baseball team. So then... So then we go, and so is that really keeping the Sabbath? Well, according to the Jewish law, no. right?
Right.
I mean, the Jewish law is very strict, and what you could and what you couldn't do on the Sabbath and what keeping the Sabbath meant. And you couldn't have anybody else serve you. You couldn't go to a restaurant and have somebody bring you food. That was breaking the Sabbath. I couldn't even drive to church because you can only go so many feet from your house on the Sabbath. That's why synagogues were, you know, little synagogues popped up everywhere. So those were the kinds of things that no matter how hard we try, we could never keep the Sabbath, not the way it was originally constructed and put forth. But that's not what. So we got to go to the principle, not the law. We're not bound by this law that we have to, you know. In fact, Jesus made a point to say when he got in trouble for this very thing, because he was getting some stuff to eat on the Sabbath, and they almost stoned him, and they said, "Hey, you're not supposed to do that on the Sabbath." And he said, "Hey, well, man, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath." In other words, we're not supposed to be bound by the Sabbath in a restrictive sense.
You're not serving it like it's an idol.
Exactly. There you go. See, putting up an idol as in the previous commandment.
Well, and what did the Jews do when they started out with 10, and then they made the book of the law, which had hundreds or thousands of sub-laws that were sort of boundaries to keep you from breaking that, those.
Yeah. Right. And the principle was if it was illegal to touch the post, then let's make it illegal to go within 200 feet of the post.
Yeah.
In fact, let's make it illegal to go in with sight of the post. And they did exactly that. They just put in laws to keep you from breaking the other laws. And it became very, very restrictive. I think Robert faded out on us again.
Oh, I'm back.
There he is.
Fantastic.
Let's get down to the last one. Any more to say on that? Robert, I'm sorry. You cut out. Did you have more to say on that?
Oh, I cut out. Okay. No. So then the stuff I said. Okay. I wasn't really listening to what I was saying. It was good, though.
I'm sure it was.
You are welcome.
All right, the last commandment that we have to go over that relates to the love of loving the Lord with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind is honoring parents. It says, honor your mother and father. It's the only commandment given with a promise. And it says, if you do, you'll live long and have a good life. And I thought that was interesting. But why is honoring your parents something that seems to be a vertical relationship? What does that have to do with loving the Lord with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind?
Because it's indicative of, it's a mirror of the image of the relationship between the church and God, I would think.
Very, very good. Very good. And it's where all of our laws of obedience come from. I mean, obedience is a big part of the Christian moral ethic. And when later on, when Jesus says, hey, pay Caesar the taxes that you owe him. You know, render unto Caesar what is Caesar's. He's hearkening back to this very principle. You honor those who've been placed in authority over you. We did not get to pick our parents. And Paul says, you know, it's the same way God establishes who the authorities are in this world. Now, in America, it's a little, you know, nowadays we've invented governing, we've invented ways to vote for our leaders. So, but back then especially, God raised up and appointed kings and queens and authorities, and he would be with one country taking over another country and all that kind of thing. And so he said, you know, don't resist, don't rebel. I set these authorities up for a reason, and you need to honor them. And that harkens back to this principle, this commandment. I'm sorry, that principle harks back to this commandment. And respect for authority is important in your relationship with God. Because if you don't respect the authorities he set over you, you're not going to respect him.
Yeah, one of the things that I learned a few years ago from my last pastor was that authority is not there to lord over you, it's there to protect you. And if you honor that, then you will stay under that protection.
Very good, I like that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's good. I thought of one more thing about idolatry as well, with one point I didn't cover as I was looking back through things, is that we can set up idols to actually worship God. And God says, don't do that. We have a tendency to want to see something. In fact, when Moses went up to get the commandments, he came back down and they'd already invented an idol to worship the Lord with.
It's funny. We we just studied that very verse this last Sunday, so I was thinking about it the whole time you were talking.
Right. Yeah. And
now, and this that brings up a good point that I should probably say. I could say, and it would be a factual statement, my pastor is Matt Chandler. So he's kind of a big deal.
Okay.
And, you know, Reformed Church and that sort of stuff. But if I say it like that and, you know, that makes me better than you or whatever, and the reason I go to that church is because it's Matt Chandler.
And you can't say anything bad about Matt Chandler.
Yeah, exactly. It, you know, well, you have to specify which Matt are you talking about. Is it the guy who wrote the book or is, you know, the guy who had a brain tumor, whatever. And so you kind of have – there is definitely that – idolatry that could crop up saying, oh, well, I go to this church, or, oh, this is my pastor, or a sort of thing.
Right.
Just because if so you set you
end
that
up
–
you end up worshiping the idol rather than the God.
Yeah.
Rather than God that's behind the idol. And I think Catholics historically have wrestled with this as well because we are attracted to imagery, and Catholics – you know, the Catholic religion has set up imagery within its liturgy. And so they have the crucifix, for instance, usually at the front of every church. And on that crucifix, they'll usually have a representation of Jesus. Now, they don't claim – they're not promoting the worship of the image. But I think they've struggled with that in the past because they have that there, that it's been a temptation for their for Catholics to worship the image of Christ rather than Christ himself.
Yeah, well, and I've actually talked to a few Catholics who, in the end, it sounds like they don't really know a lot about the Bible, and they'll say, you know, if you've lost something, you like stick this, you know, this saint here, and like you pray to the saint, and then you do this. I'm like, I don't think that's what you know you really believe, and they're like, no, you have to pray to that saint. I'm like, okay, that sounds superstitious now. And so they're just misunderstanding their own church, basically.
Right, and I've met Baptists that, you know, if you drink beer, you're going to hell. I mean, you know, we can all mistranslate what the Bible actually teaches, and that's the that's our problem is we put up these false it all comes down to this, I think, is when you've got to read the Bible. You've got to read the Bible. But when you come across something in the Bible that you don't like, that is contrary to what you believe is true, you got to make a choice then. Do I go with what I believe and try to find a way around it in the Bible? Or do I change what I believe to match what the Bible's teaching me? And if we all did that, there would be one denomination. Mm-hmm. We might disagree on interpretations, but there would be one denomination. And I think that everybody falls under that problem. I mean, from the Calvinists to the Catholics.
So, well, then would you say that, learning this internal apologetics, as you've called it, is really just a tool kind of to achieve that?
I think so. I think it can be. I think I don't think there's any – I don't think there's any barriers between a Catholic being a 100% great Christian. Mm-hmm. As long as they're reading their Bible and doing that and modifying their life to follow what the Bible teaches and what Jesus follow Jesus into what he leads you into through his word. If you do that, regardless if you're Catholic or Calvinist or Reformed or Lutheran or whatever you are within any church, I think there's nothing between you and God. And as long as the church is preaching the word and leading you towards, that kind of relationship with the Lord where you respect his word enough to, then it doesn't matter. I mean, even people in Rob Bell's church can find Jesus if they'll just read their Bible.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point that our faith is not defined by the person that we listen to on Sunday,
right,
or the author of the latest book at the Christian bookstore.
That's right. If you're reading your Bible and you're listening to Oprah every day, well, when the Bible disagrees with Oprah, you have to make a choice, and that's what defines you. That's what makes you a Christian or not a Christian. You're either an Oprahite or you're a Christian at that point, right?
Right.
That's the first time I've ever heard the the suffix of "ite" make it sound more like a parasite than a race of people.
Or a rock.
Yeah.
An operite. Okay. Okay, well, let's move on. That was our lesson for today. Let's move on to fun stuff.
Sure.
It's been 2 weeks now, but I went to Six Flags.
Mm.
I'm sorry.
Do you know what Six Flags is? Does everybody know what Six Flags is? It's an amusement park. It's like a really cheap, it's like a trailer park version of Disney World.
Yeah. They're all over the country.
Six Flags?
Yep.
Yeah. I knew there were two or three. Are there more than that?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, there's the one in California is called Magic Mountain.
Oh, okay. That's a Six Flags company.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure that there's one in Florida.
Okay.
I think there's more than three.
Okay.
Yeah.
There are three in California, two in Georgia, one in Illinois, one in Maryland, one in Massachusetts, one in Missouri, three in New Jersey, two in New York, three in Texas, one in Canada, and one in Mexico.
From the top of his head. Can you believe that?
Wow. Yeah, everybody give him a hand.
Thank you.
He's a machine.
But now, the three in Texas, they're not all, because like one of them, I know that the Hurricane Harbor is a Six Flags park, but that's a water park.
Right.
So,
oh, I see. Okay.
The Six Flags I'm talking about is a roller coaster park, and it's very Warner Brothers themed.
Yeah.
Okay. So
they both are really
Bugs Bunny, and I've never been to Hurricane Harbor, so I didn't know that.
No, I meant Fiesta Texas.
Oh, Fiesta Texas, the other Six Flags one. Okay, I didn't know that. Okay. So, so it's Warner Brothers, and here's the thing though that's very different about Disney World versus Six Flags, and that is, there's advertisements everywhere. Now in Disney, there's advertisements, but they're all for Disney products, right? So it all meshes together. But when you ride a ride at Six Flags over Texas, when you ride, you get in a roller coaster, and there's ads on the side of the car. You're riding in a cell phone, you know, PC, you know, PCS Metro, you know, yeah, exactly. And so you're not riding Judge Roy Scream anymore. You're riding Motorola's Judge Roy Scream, you know, this kind of thing. Yeah. So,
well, hey, you know, if that ends up keeping like the ticket prices lower, that's fine.
It doesn't. It
costs me
No, of course not.
It costs me and Helen over $100 to get in.
Yes.
Ridiculous. I could go to Disney World for that.
I don't know. I don't know.
Almost. Well, I couldn't get
still,
there.
Yeah, that's expensive.
It's expensive for what it is. But anyway, it's roller coasters, it's rides, it's thrill rides, it's that kind of thing. There's some shows, but not as much as there used to be. And then there's Batman, because that's evidently for some reason Batman's associated with Warner Brothers now. I think it's DC. Did Warner Brothers buy DC Comics or something? I don't know.
I think that there is a connection there, yes.
Okay, so we've got Batmanville over there where they have a Batman ride and a Mr. Freeze ride and all that's going on, and Superman ride. They have a Superman ride. So anyway, we went and we did, and this was Helen's first trip to a theme park. She'd been to Disney World, but this was her first time to go to Six Flags and ride a real roller coaster.
Ooh.
Magic Mountain, or when we went to Space Mountain, was closed when we went to Disney World. So we didn't do that. And this was her first opportunity to ride a real roller coaster. And she rode the first roller coaster that I ever rode.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
And you know, when like it's still standing, I mean, those sticks that were holding up must have been pretty weak.
Well, it's petrified now. So
okay. That's good. So it's good. Stronger than it was.
It's stronger
before.
Than when I rode it. Yeah, it was Judge Roy Scream. It was very new when I got on it. And for the very first time. And that was my first roller coaster experience. And that was Helen's first roller coaster experience. So that's pretty cool.
So is she a lover of the roller coasters now?
Yeah, she really likes. Yeah, but when we rode, we rode the Shockwave, which does a loop-de-loop. And I told her, I said, put your head back to the back of the seat when you go through the loop-de-loop. And then, you know, it'll be fine. Well, she didn't do that. She like ducked her head because she was scared at the last second, and so she ducked her head. And when you duck your head on that thing, you know the G's just force you down. And so I think she almost passed out going through the loop-de-loop.
Oh, awesome.
And so she really didn't care for that one as much. But she did like the Judge Roy Bean, and we wrote another one called there's a new one that spins while it goes. It's individual cars, and instead of being in like a little train, you're on individual cars, and the car spins as it's going on the track.
Golly.
So as it goes around a corner, the car will actually spin, and it makes it even seem like you're going even faster than
you. Who comes up with these torture devices?
Yeah, why would you put yourself through this?
That was her favorite one. She loved it. Awesome. But then she wouldn't get on Batman because Batman had loop-de-loops, and she was freaked out by the loop-de-loops. So she was mixed review. I think she enjoyed the roller coasters, but she still doesn't like to do the loops. Now, Robert, I have heard that you have a very controversial theory about roller coasters.
Well, I currently have a grant proposal, like $80 million. Mm-hmm. I'm going to study this, you know, seriously. But it seems that every person, whenever.
Oh, no.
No.
Someone who.
Oh, there.
Like. Hello?
Okay, you're Hello. Back. You're back. We got through your grant proposal, and then what happened?
Okay, every person that I ask this question to always gives me one answer or the other one. Okay. Are you someone who likes to fall, or are you someone who likes to spin?
I like to fall.
Okay, do you like to spin?
No.
Yeah, see? And it's always the opposite. Okay, kids, you don't like to fall, do you?
No.
Do you like to spin?
No. Why would I want either one of these?
You don't like to spin? How like old are you now?
In my chair. Like in my
okay.
Well, that's the same thing. Fine.
Yeah, I'll do that.
So like you could do this in your office. Do you lift your chair up and then pull a little lever to make it fall down? Or do you sit there and spin around and around? I always lift it up and fall, and you do the spin. See, it's the same. So Robert's theory is holding up so far.
Yep. Everyone I talk to. Yeah, okay.
Okay.
Makes sense. I think that
I'm doing it right now. Wee.
It's either something in the brain, okay? In my extensive research, it's either something in the brain makes you crazy enough to want to fall, or it's something metabolic or physiological that makes your stomach come up higher when you fall, making you not want to fall. So it's one of those.
Well, wait a minute now. But what if it's experiential? What if it? In other words, you're saying that it's a priori. In other words, you're born like this. But what if it's experiential? In that, when you were a kid, your father either spun you around or threw you up in the air and caught you.
Okay, it's going to have to be $100 million. Because I'm going to need some testing. Obviously, I'm going to need two children.
Because I was just thinking about that, about falling and spinning, and I realized that when I was a kid, my dad would throw me up in the air and catch me. And he would throw me so high that it would scare everybody else.
Oh, yeah.
You're throwing it too high. Oh, my goodness. And But I saw other people who would grab a hold of their kids' hands and spin around in the yard, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So oh, sure. Wonder. Yeah.
Yeah, all I know is that whenever we get on the teacups,
yes,
I can spin that thing so fast that Chelsea can't even bring her arms up. And I'm just laughing.
You would be laughing if you were riding with me. You'd be covered with puke.
Exactly. See, nothing makes me puke except, you know, the sight of maggots.
And mayonnaise.
I don't like to fall. At all.
Really?
I don't like the biggest roller coastery kind of thing where you fall is, you know, that I actually like are the log jammer rides.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Everybody likes like everybody. The
and there's
likes
just one
the
quick drop.
Flings.
It's not that far.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
It's the only
causes a lot of anxiety.
Oh, what? I'm sorry. What was that about anxiety?
Well, it still causes a lot of anxiety.
Oh,
in me.
Even the log ride.
Yeah.
That's the only one Faith will ride. That's the only ride she'll ride, the log ride.
Now,
she didn't like to spin or drop. She wants to be very
so
still.
So she's a kid. So apparently there's a third category.
Yeah. A kid's category.
I don't like things that an any ride that would necessarily give a normal human being any sort of endorphin, adrenaline boost sort of thing. No,
I think you're right.
I'll sit on the ground.
Robert, I think you have to enter a third category, a kid's category. Because okay. Faith is the exact same way. She doesn't – I mean, it's not even – it's like you say, well, I just want to – she would prefer to be stationary.
Yeah.
But when we're in a car, if I get on the gas too much, just enough to feel the acceleration, she didn't like that either. She goes, oh, I'm going to get a headache. Oh, that's too much.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, she doesn't like to, you know, anything that feels that sort of adrenaline rush from motion, she didn't like. Whether it's spinning, whether it's straight line, whether it's falling, no.
Huh.
Have you ever been on a long highway and there was like a sudden hill and there's like that?
Oh, I love that.
That yes.
Yes. Okay,
that's as much as I can take. And everyone in the car goes, whee!
It's a roller coaster with no rails.
I think Kitch's problem is a lack of vitamin D. He just needs to go outside every now and then.
I go outside every morning now.
Oh, good.
Very good.
Good. We were concerned that your feet were going into the carpet.
No.
Okay.
I still have to. I wear shoes, so they couldn't grow into the carpet.
Oh, okay. That's what Treehorn thought, but you know, it happens.
Treehorn or Treebeard?
Treebeard. That's who it was. I'm sorry. Treebeard. Very good.
That's my impression.
That's very good.
That's all I can do.
Here's mine. Bark.
Oh, that was lame. That was a joke.
That was lame.
That's what that was.
It was, yeah.
All right. So, but we did ride the roller coaster that did both. It did both the spinning and the dropping.
So how did you do?
That was called the Pandemonium. It was called the Pandemonium. It was a very bad name for a roller coaster, by the way. They should all be named after sharks or something like that. You know, the Greek gods, okay. You know, something like that. Pandemonium is the name of the ride, and it did both. It did the dropping and the spinning, and it was fun. But the spinning did make me nervous. I can spin a little, and that drove me to the edge. Because at the end, when we rode it the first time, you get to the end of the ride, and you kind of have to wait in line to go in and get off the ride. So you come around, and your cars all kind of stack up there in a row. And the first time we rode it, it was fine. We went around there, and we sat there, and we got off. Well, the second time we went around, we came to that little line where you stop, but the car was still spinning. And so we sat there and spun. That was the limit. I was like, okay, this needs to stop soon. And I'm picking out a point, you know. I'm doing the little trick where you pick out a tree and you just watch it as far as you can. Then you whip your head around and watch it as far as you can. You whip your head around.
Like the ice skaters do. You're
exactly, good, yes.
And, or ballerinas.
It kept me from throwing up, but I did not want to ride it a third time.
Well, here, Chelsea just told me that someone that she knows got a job working on a project that's going to be, I think, on the strip where they're going to build like one of the biggest Ferris wheels ever.
Cool.
And the each car is going to hold like 30 or 40 people.
That's amazing.
My gosh.
That's like the original Ferris wheel.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, since it's Vegas, it's going to have like a pole, you know, and like a stripper in each one. So,
yeah.
Can't wait to go there.
Why would you get on a Ferris wheel?
See, now I'm okay with a Ferris wheel. My thing is, it feels like they're going to suddenly spin it up to full speed. And just think about what that would be like. I mean, you would be floating in your car until it hit the bottom.
Yeah.
Well, the Ferris wheel is more of a dropping than a spinning, right? The original Ferris wheel was built at the Chicago, the World's Fair in Chicago in 1898. Mm-hmm. And it was huge. It was like the, you know, huge, biggest Ferris wheel ever built. And it was the first one. It's just amazing. You'd think there would be a ramp up.
It was the biggest one ever built. It was the first one.
Exactly. It was the first. Well, I'm saying to this day. I mean, even the one in England is smaller. In London is smaller than the original Ferris wheel.
Wow.
That thing was unbelievable. It was 10 stories tall. It was huge.
And it was built with 1890s technology. Yeah, no, thank you.
Exactly. Cast iron rivets. And in fact, when they first turned it on, a horse was killed from things falling off the Ferris wheel as it spun around because like hammers and nails and rivets and all this stuff started falling off the thing when they first turned it on.
This is my most favorite story ever.
That was a horse killed. That place would be shut down forever.
Forever.
Twice. No, there was only one incident where a man went crazy on the Ferris wheel. He went crazy and he wanted to jump out or something. And anyway, they set on him until they got to the bottom.
He was someone that I would personally place in the kids category. Yeah, someone tricked him.
I'm moving, and this isn't natural. Yes. No, but and the cars held like 40, 50 people.
Oh my gosh, that's insane.
It was crazy. And like I said, you'd think there would have been a ramp up to this. You know, like there would have been somebody would have made a small one and then somebody made a bigger one and then there'd been like a contest and then it's like, oh, mine's bigger than yours. And you know, and then would have finally been this giant one. No, the first one was ginormous.
Well, it wasn't, you know, a school fair. It's the World's Fair. You got to bring it.
Well, he was trying to compete. They were trying to compete with the Eiffel Tower. The previous World's Fair was in Paris, and they'd built the Eiffel Tower. And so they wanted something that would attract people to come to this World's Fair. And so
– they're like, look at this. Ours moves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're Americans.
Ours kills a horse.
Ours comes with death involved.
USA.
We're capitalists, buddy. We know how to do this. Of course, it was also lit with electricity. And which was the first, it wasn't the first exhibition of electricity, but it was the first that most people saw.
Ah, yeah. Our use uses electric lights.
Yes. It was called the White City because when it was lit up at night, just everything was so brilliant. They'd painted all the buildings white and it was amazing. It was supposed to be amazing. It seemed like it was amazing anyway.
Well, I want to hear about this movie that Robert wants to talk to us about.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, it's not a new movie. It was back in 98, but it was when I was over at a friend's house a few weeks ago raiding his DVD collection because it seems like other people's DVD collection is amazing and you wonder why you don't own all of these and your own is like, I've seen these 10 times, you know.
Yeah.
And one of the ones that I grabbed because I was trying to find something that was kids friendly that I just love, and it is the movie Truman Show.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, Kidge, have you seen this? Because it was out in 98, and you were like, what, 4?
I was 11.
You were 11. Okay, yeah. So it probably wasn't on your radar when it was new.
I think I saw it within the next 2 years after it came out.
Oh, okay. Have you seen it since?
No.
Okay. I highly recommend going back and watching it again, especially with just what's happened in this in this country with reality TV. This movie totally holds up, you know, as far as what someone
was before a reality TV, right?
Well, yeah. There had been like a couple of things, and they kind of took that idea of like an audience is willing to watch almost anything, and they said, okay, let's go to the extreme. Let's take this human who was adopted by a corporation, you know, which is, you know, it's like a crazy social kind of like a commentary there. And let's put him in front of a camera and he's the only one that doesn't know. And his entire life is like basically watching Big Brother or, you know, one of those horrible, horrible TV shows. And it follows him throughout his life, and he, you know, knows that there's something wrong, but he can't figure it out, and he has these fears that they use to keep him on the set.
Oh yeah, like water.
Yes, exactly. So, and I watched it, and it's a completely clean movie. Uh-huh. Okay. Now it does have Jim Carrey, which I know some people were really turned off by him, but
yeah,
this is probably one of his best roles.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Because he's not crazy right off the bat.
In case I don't see you, good afternoon and good night.
That's right.
Hey, good evening and good night.
Yeah. So they slowly ramp up his character just, you know, as the story goes along. And I like how they start in really, really close, you know, with just him. And then as the story progresses, they start to basically metaphorically, you know, like push back on the camera until you see like the director and then you see the viewers. And then it goes back to him. Uh-huh. And how he's going to sort of like get out of this whole thing. It's a great movie, and I, as soon as I finished it, I wanted to watch it again.
Huh. I'll have to watch it again. It is something I want to go revisit.
Yeah.
It's one of those, though, that, like, it's one of those, I guess, that I classify in my mind as, okay, I know what that is. I don't need to see it again. But yeah. I think you're right. I think that it's so well done, it's, mm-hmm. it gives it a... Yeah, I think I do want to see it again. Well,
there's a lot of humor that is based on, you know, this idea of, oh, I could totally see a producer doing that on a reality show. Uh-huh. You know, not that they ever actually would, mm-hmm. but it's like, oh, that's so funny. There's a little bit of social commentary in that. If this actually took place, we would probably watch it.
Oh, I would. I'm in.
Yeah, you know, until it just got old, right? Yeah. So it's funny that way, but then there's like some light serious stuff and, you know, it's a little bit of a love story, but it's not a rom-com. So uh-huh. I just think it was a very well-paced movie.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for the review.
Sure.
Yes.
Yes. Next week it's Kidge's turn.
I need to come up with something.
Please let it be anime. Please let it be anime.
Oh, please don't.
Last time you said you were wanting Star Wars.
How about anime Star Wars?
I have a Star Wars manga, which is anime comic books.
Yeah, you'll have to tell us what that is. Yeah. Okay.
You okay? Introduction to... I'm not familiar with the word manga.
You'll have to tell us, me and Robert, as old fogies, about what this is. Yes.
This is a graphic novel. Okay, yes. It's like TV, but it doesn't move.
What? All right, everybody. Well, thanks for joining us this week. Tune in next week. We'll go over the other five commandments, and then we'll chat. We'll hang out. So it's been fun. It's been nice hanging with you this week, guys.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah. It's good. Yeah, okay, it's better than stick in the eye, huh?
Oh, absolutely.
A lot better than a stick in the eye, yes.
Okay. Well, vayos con Dios, everyone.
Vayos con Dios.
Vayos con Dios.